Introduction. Welcome to the Sunday Night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I'd now like to introduce Scott, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After he shares, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what he has shared. So please help me welcome Scott S., a compulsive overeater from Michigan. Yay, Scott.
Hi, thank you all so much for having me, and thank you for the introduction, Pat. So yeah, my name is Scott S. I'm from Detroit, Michigan. My home group is the Thursday night Chaska online meeting. I have 480 days of abstinence, and I'm a compulsive overeater and sugar addict. I'm very happy to be with all of you tonight. When I think about my personal experience with compulsive overeating, it's kind of been for as long as I can remember. You know, it was something that I think carried itself from a very young age. I always had a fixation with food. Not to a point to where it was maybe more than any other young boy, you know, but there was definitely there. But what I do remember growing up the most is this constant feeling of awkwardness that would persist through my life. So if you look at me, I'm currently 6'4". I've always been a foot taller than everybody around me. I've always been larger than anybody around me. And so that kind of worked its way into my personality of kind of always feeling othered, you know, as well as maybe not fitting in with the small town in Michigan that I grew up with. But overall, I had a very happy childhood. I come from a family of recovery, from alcoholism specifically. So growing up, I was always very aware of the signs of alcoholism and other addictions and how that could work its way into someone's life. However, with all that information, I still found my drug of choice, which was food. Knowledge of the subject really availed me nothing in that aspect, but it did eventually lead me here. So basically up until high school, I had a pretty normal childhood, you know, and everything was okay. But then two things happened in high school for me. So that would be the introduction of social media into society, and then more freedom. So whether that was monetary freedom, whether that was having a car and all of that, and all of those things perpetuated into what became a pretty intense food addiction. So as far as social media is concerned, that's where a lot of bullying and online harassment happened. You know, a lot of starting to feel low self-worth in my personal life and starting to feel a lot of comparison toward others, which I've always had, and I always will compare myself to others to my detriment. And then as far as monetary funds and the car, I discovered a lot of really bad habits that at the time I really enjoyed. And for me, a lot of it was even the process of going out and sneaking for food was probably just as much fun as it was actually eating the food. And it really became a comfort to me. It really became a way where I can numb out and really kind of tune out the noise in my life. It works until it doesn't, right? Until it started affecting my health, and so until it started affecting my spiritual health, until it started affecting my mental health. So the best way I can describe this is when you start being in an addiction, you could have a room full of people who absolutely love you, you know, and they care about you and they tell you how much they care about you, but you still feel completely alone because it's not everyone else. It was always about me, right? I was always selfish, but then also how I viewed the world and how I thought I was maybe always a victim of my own life was definitely in my own heart. In the Big Book, it says, we talk intolerance while we were intolerant of others ourselves. And for me, that was definitely the case. I always felt like a victim. You know, I always felt like, oh, the world's been rude against me. And so then I have to do this. And the biggest thing would come was I started gaining weight. You know, and that was probably the most visible aspect of my addiction, you know, and how it presented itself. And it became a way in which I could hurt others because people close to me would say things like, if you just lost weight, you'd be perfect. Or if you just did this, or if you just did that. And then I remember I would eat at people if I was mad at them, if I was upset with them, if I was fearful of them. And that became a form of retaliation in my life. So this continued and it started spiraling. And then I went to college, which then gave me all the freedom I wanted to completely indulge into my addiction. This is when I started dabbling in weight loss culture and dieting culture. You know, I could tell you how to lose weight. I could tell you which diets worked, which ones didn't. I could tell you the science behind it. Could I still do it? Absolutely not. You know, which is just, there is this really awesome quote in the Big Book, and says, many of us felt we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism or compulsive overeating as we know it. This utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or wish. And it was in these 4 years of college that I think food became my primary motivation. It became my whole life, really, you know. And so what would happen was it led toward every health complication you could possibly think of. I would remember just pain everywhere. I became diabetic. You know, I remember having these horrible chest pains at night and becoming very, I would hope like, I would just be like, oh, I hope I make it tomorrow. You know, at this point I was pushing around 500 pounds. I remember having conversations with my parents at night, hoping that they were good conversations. So if I didn't wake up the next day, they would remember me in a good light. And trying to counteract that as best as I could, to try to appear that I was okay for everyone else, because at the end of the day, what I was I was a very fearful and I was a very angry person, to be completely frank. But I felt like I could not let anybody know that. So I put on every mask under the sun. I did all these extracurriculars. I tried to get the best grades possible. I tried to do all this stuff, right? Just to prove, because I didn't feel like a human anymore. You know, I felt like something wandering through life, you know. I mean, people used to, you know, the addiction almost felt like a possession for me. And I remember moments of clarity, you know, in the middle of a binge, and I would kind of come to and look around and be like, what am I doing? What's happening? But then the fog would kind of roll back over, and then I would go back into this stupor. And this carried on till this whole cycle carried on for me until about the last semester of university. I was home for the winter holidays and I had a good old fashioned intervention, which is not something you would expect for food addiction, but it was definitely my experience. And I just remember being furious with my parents, being this white hot angry and being like, this is all your fault. And what are you talking about? And blame, point fingers, you know? They convinced me, I think through God's grace, to go to a food addiction recovery treatment center. And because at the end of the day, and this is what it says in the big book, like liquor or food in my case was but a symptom. So we had to get down to the cause and conditions. And I definitely was someone who had to get down to the cause and conditions. So I signed up for this food addiction program and then I put it out of my mind. And I remember going there and I remember plotting the whole way. I was like, I'm going to prove to them that I'm so okay. I'm going to prove to them that I've got this and that I know what I'm doing, you know, and that everything's going to be fine. That's where I was introduced to OA and the 12 steps. And that's definitely not the only way you have to be introduced to this program. There's thousands and thousands of different avenues. That's just my story of how I became into this wonderful program. And through that, you know, I started working the steps in this kind of controlled environment. And I started learning what abstinence looks like in my life. And so how I define abstinence is I weigh and measure my meals as designed by a medical practitioner. And I also avoid all trigger foods with a focus in any sweetener or processed flours. And that's just what I do for my abstinence. I realized that I was basically the arbiter of all of my unhappiness in this world. And it was very difficult, but as the big book says, selfish self-centeredness. That's what we think the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and retaliate. I realized I always thought I was like the nicest person, and I always thought I would just let everything go and all that, but I didn't. I hold everything in, and I'd bubble it up, and I'd put it on the shelf, and then I would wait for the perfect moment for you to maybe mess up, and I would unleash everything onto you, right? Because that was my alcoholic mind. It was constantly looking for how people were not living up to my expectations, because I was trying to be the director, the actor, you know, all the parts in the big book that we talk about that happens with this. And so I got clean from my addictive foods. And the process of that detox was enough to convince me that these were totally drugs for me. You know, it was a pretty intense process that I won't get into because it's kind of visual. But it was for the first time I felt like there wasn't this haze over me anymore. Like, I felt like I could think, I felt like I could be a part of something. But the biggest part of it all that I felt terrified about was this whole idea of spirituality in my life, because I had basically sworn off of all spirituality, all religion. I grew up very religious, I decided in my teens that I was not about that anymore. And I knew, because everybody would talk about this, and we talk about it in the program, it's this three-legged stool, right? So that's why this works for me, is because it combines a physical aspect, a spiritual aspect, and a mental or emotional aspect, right? And I was not willing to start letting God into my life. And I had a very lovely fellow sit down, and they're like, can you believe in anything? And that was kind of a good point. You know, I was like, well, of course I can believe in stuff. I can believe in anything. And they're like, well, just believe in what you can, right? Just try. Can you believe in the collective love of your fellows? And I said, sure. You know, so I started there. And through the process, I actually started working through the steps. And I, you know, they say in the program, a fellow of ours has a line, and it's recovery isn't, he says, recovery isn't for those who want it or need it. It's for those who work for it. And the great thing about the big book is it gives you the 12 steps, and your sponsor helps you work through the 12 steps. And I know originally approaching the 12 steps, I was very confused because I couldn't wrap my brain around, like, so we're going to talk about things, or we're going to pray about things, or we're going to read these things, listening to these things, I'm going to become okay. You know, and then at the time, because I came for the vanity, not for the sanity. Now that's, I'm here for the sanity. I was like, and that's going to help me lose weight? What are you talking about? But it does. And I was just constantly, I would fight it the entire way with my wonderful sponsor. But she's like, are you just willing to do what I ask you? Are you just willing to do what I ask you? And I said, yeah, I will. Because at that point, like I said before, I tried everything. You know, I've went to the doctors. I was told I'd probably die young, you know, and that was just gonna be the reality of my life. And so with my sponsor, I worked through these steps, and these just start chipping away at all these hard exteriors that I built up all of these years, and all of these resentments that I had all these years. And I remember I used to have just these fears, these uncontrollable fears in my life. And then all of a sudden, working through, especially the fourth and fifth steps, I didn't have these fears anymore, and I didn't have these panic attacks anymore. And it just started kind of working, and I started feeling connected to my fellows and to a higher power and to something bigger than what I was, you know. And I couldn't believe it, you know, and I was happy. I remember coming back home, and I lived with about eight other guys in college. And one of them just kind of seeing me after I'd found a way and kind of started working the program, he kind of just looked at me and goes, wow, you're like actually happy. I was like, oh, you know, like, thanks, I guess, you know, but yeah, I did. I felt genuinely happy. And I think, and it's not saying like I live in a state of constant benevolence and whatever, but I think when I was in my addiction, there was this consistent tone of dread that lingered, you know, and that was always present. And working through the 12 steps, I still feel emotions, and I still allow myself to feel emotions, but I have a way to work through things, you know, and I have a way to, you know, now through the 10th and 11th steps, if something now comes up, you know, I don't have to hold it in anymore. You know, it's so exhausting. I think of this every time I speak to someone who maybe, you know, might need a program, but isn't in the program, and the amount they hold in, you know, and the amount that I held in of fear, of constant fear, of constant anger. And it just doesn't have to be that way, you know, to be able to release it, you know. And I'm not perfect, you know, I will still fight it every blue moon, you know. And in the big book, it says, when I am unwilling to do the right thing, I become restless, irritable, and discontent. And ain't that the truth? I know. Like, and what it basically is, if I'm starting to feel really out of whack, if the food's starting to call, if my life starts to feel a little off kilter, that means I'm not performing the steps at the speed and at the volume that I should. You know, so whether that's, oh, you need to start making more 10 steps, you need to start listening to more 10 steps, you need to start doing more outreach calls, you know, all of these build up. And so, you know, finally, just to close a bit on the steps, the beautiful thing is they never have to end. And you do kind of think, I thought when I came in, okay, once I do step 10, 12, I'll be done. Life kind of keeps happening, you know, but that's completely okay, you know, because you don't have to face, you don't have to face life alone anymore. You have people, complete strangers sometimes, who care just about you with like unconditional love. Where else are you going to get that? And it's real, you know? So it's been a life-changing part of my life. And then from there, I became part of different OA groups. So whether that's my home group or that's the other groups like the Monday Night Toronto Big Book group, there are so many amazing groups, both in person and online out there that folks can join. And from there, I found service, you know, so whether that's for a group, I do like an email list, or you lead a meeting, you know, or the biggest form of service, which is sponsorship. And that, I think, is when probably I became dead set in wanting to do this. And I know they say, you know, only do it for today, you know, and all that stuff. And I don't think about the future. I think the difference now is I just don't think about whether I'm going to do it or not. It's just become my life, you know, instead of thinking about for today. And I'm not saying that's always the case. You know, I definitely have moments where I'm like, okay, I'm going to make a few calls today. And I think today might be a little bit more where I pray a little extra, you know, but overall, it is, it's a better way to live, at least in my mind. And so with sponsorship, I think it's the greatest joy to be able to take someone through their, to help guide them through their recovery as well, you know? And it's taught me a lot about my own personal, maybe some more character defects that I didn't exercise the first time, that I then had to readdress and re-exercise, especially, just kind of making other people's journey about me, you know, and that was something I worked through heavily in my program. And that's something that I've been very grateful that was pointed out to me. But then, you know, you get this wonderful connection with someone, you know, that you never thought you would have, that I always hoped for, you know. And I think at the end of the day, with the 12 steps and with the program, it fixes a lot, but it also gave me the capacity to add a lot more joy back into my life, you know? So, I was surprised at how much I thought about food and how much mental space I left toward food, which is definitely not something, if you would have told me a few years ago that was the case, I would have been like, no, not at all. But it is. And so you get to, and it can be the big things, right? It can be maybe you start dating again, maybe you start connecting with people, maybe you start a new career move. But then it's just the waking up, but then there's the good stuff of just waking up with yourself and being okay, you know, and all that. And I think, and like I said, because I remember being in this treatment program and we would hear people speak, you know, and I heard from a Catholic nun, I heard from a high powered New York lawyer, I heard from all these people, you know, that spanned all of humanity. And the big book says, I listened to their stories and found so many areas where we overlapped, not all the deeds, but the feelings of remorse and hopelessness. I learned that compulsive overeating isn't a sin, but it's a disease. And I think for me, that was important. You know, it's the two parts, right? It's the physical that I have, and it's the mental, spiritual that I have. I can get off the physical, right? I can abstain from my foods and hopefully clear out my system if there's any of those issues with that. But the mental now, is that's what I got to worry about. You know, that's what I got to keep working on. And so I think through my fellows and through this program, you're able to do that. So let's see what else I want to talk about. Sorry, I'll just consult my notes really quick. But yeah, and I think through this program, I've also had the ability to have my family be a part of this, which, you know, I'm not saying that that's something that has to be done. It's just something that I've had in my life, you know, and it's been wonderful. And I think that it all revolves around the big book, right? Because no matter what addiction we all have, the big book, as Pat stated previously, it is kind of one of the best solutions out there. And it is something that I think just lays it out so clearly, you know, especially when it pertains to my compulsive overeating. So, and with that, I have a quick picture that I would like to share, if that's okay. And that will kind of help guide this. Sorry, I'm trying to find the share screen. Oh, can I be allowed to share in this meeting? Thank you.
Davila will make you a co-host, and then you can share.
Awesome. So I can give a preface to this. So the one picture was me right before I was about to graduate from college, and the other one was me a few weeks ago. And so basically, I like these two pictures, right? Because this picture, I think everybody thought I had my life pretty together, right? And I was smiling. Of course, I have my mask on and stuff, but this was right before I decided to go to OA, and I remember just feeling like the loneliest that I've ever felt. And it wasn't because I was alone. You know, I had friends, I had people around me and all this stuff, but it was all inside my brain. And this was me a few weeks ago, you know, so I'm able to kind of change up my life. And I think the fortitude that the program's been able to afford me has been not only appreciated, but just it's been such a blessing in my life, you know. So what I do now to kind of stay abstinent, I still weigh and measure my food. That is not something I ever plan on giving up ever in my life, because the second I give myself a little bit of lay room, I will probably take that and run with it. I still, not only do I stay away from my binge foods or my trigger foods that I initially thought of, but I also am now constantly looking for more, because as life moves on, you know, there are some things where I'm like, oh, that might now be a trigger. So constantly making sure that my mental list and my physical list are up to date. I sponsor some wonderful people that are just near and dear to my heart. And I also have an open space. If anybody's looking for a sponsor, I'd be more than happy to sponsor them. I do outreach calls. I try to do at least 3 a week, you know, if not more. And outreach calls are, they're, I never really like want to do them, but I'm always so grateful that I do them, because for me in my recovery, I think that's whenever my higher power wants me to get something through my head, that's usually the way that they kind of tell me, right? Like, I'll have a call and it happens every time without fail. It's always like someone will say something and I'll be like, oh shoot, like that's exactly what I needed to hear this week, you know. But it's wonderful how my higher power works through. I journal, I meditate, I pray, I'm constantly working through the steps. I see where I can provide service while also making sure that it's out of a place of the program and not maybe necessarily a place of my ego, you know. And overall, I just try to stay in constant contact with my higher power. And it's hard, right? Life gets busy. This past few weeks, I've had late nights for work, you know, and I could skip out on meetings altogether, but I know I have to meet what I've said is my lot, how many meetings I need to make a week, you know, just for my own, to stay spiritually fit and my own sanity. So even if maybe I cannot make another meeting, then there's going to be another meeting involved. You know, it's just the way it is. And also finding fellows that I can connect with. I was very happy to find the Toronto group, and I love the Canadians over there. So y'all have been absolutely wonderful and strong recovery. So that's been wonderful. And then also I'm a part of Young Persons in OA, which is, it's the funniest group because we'll be talking on like program talk, but then it's like young person slang in there, you know, and it's so, you know, they're a real hoot and a holler. And doing 10 step trains or 10 step
chats. 5 minutes, Scott.
Perfect. Thank you so much. You know, all of these, I say all of this to say that there is a lot of resources out there, no matter where you're coming from, no matter what community you're coming from, they're all online. They're all easily accessible. And they're, it's just people here that care about you. And so I guess I will end my talk with this. I know I still cannot do it alone, you know? And I think that's whenever I try to do it on my own, that's when maybe whatever you want to call my own self-doubt, negative energy, the devil, whatever you want to call it, that's how they're going to get to me, is to try to segment myself away from folks. So I want to thank you all very much for having me with all of you tonight and keeping me in the loop and being there and being part of my strength. And I think with that, I will pass. Thank you all very much.